the risk of reaching out. More and more headlines in Canada and elsewhere are talking about loneliness and social isolation as public health risks that rival obesity and cigarette smoking. I read one article about a helpline in the UK for seniors that receives 10,000 calls each week. They provide answers about community resources, but their main purpose is combating loneliness and providing human connection. One caller shared with the helpline volunteer that she had spent her 81st birthday alone and, in fact, hadn't spoken to anyone in over a week. Social isolation is, in fact, a growing problem for people of all ages. People can feel lonely and friendless in their teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and so on. And strangely, even people who are not isolated, people with busy families and careers, report difficulties in making meaningful connections beyond the ones they already have. This puzzling conundrum was addressed in an article entitled, "Why is it hard to make friends over 30?" The author, Alex Williams, opens the article by describing meeting a guy with whom he really clicked. They had friendship chemistry. They were energized by each other's company and could talk for hours on end. Williams said he was the kind of person who would have ended up as a groomsman at his wedding if they had met in college. But somehow, though the friend enthusiasm was mutual, they had only managed to get together 3 or 4 times over the past 4 years. Williams writes, "We are friends, but not quite friends. We keep trying to get over the hump, but life gets in the way." Williams continues, "Our story is not unusual. In your 30s and 40s, plenty of new people enter your life through work, children's play dates, and of course, Facebook. But actual close friends, the kind you make in college, the kind you call in a crisis, those are in shorter supply." End quote. You might consider your own social situation. Who do you still count as close friends? Who could you call in a crisis? Williams cites several factors that make it harder for people in their 30s and 40s to maintain and make friends. The priorities of work and family leave less time for friendship. Seeing old friends is a challenge, let alone making new ones. Perhaps because time seems more limited, people can also become more choosy about their friends as they age. Instead of a wide variety of different kinds of people, they seek just a few that specifically meet their own needs. Furthermore, the conditions that sociologists say facilitate friendship are circumstantially less available, namely proximity, repeated unplanned interactions, and a setting that encourages people to let their guard down and confide in one another. Making friends takes spending a lot of time together in the same place, in a setting that encourages people to relax, be themselves, and confide about what's really going on for them. Huh. Here comes the pivot. Church is the... Thank you. She saw where I was going. Not just because she's a minister. You saw where I was going, too. Church is supposed to be a place to make meaningful connections. We welcome you here as your authentic self. We encourage you to confide in one another about what's really going on for you. It's a place where we join an intergenerational community to ponder life's puzzles, to support one another, and care for our larger world. So here's another couple questions to consider. Within this Unitarian Universalist community, can you name 3 adults with whom you feel connected. To what extent are the connections as deep as you would like them to be? What about children or youth? What kids do you know by name? There is a coming-of-age ritual that a UU colleague told me about recently. A Christian minister and his wife made it up for their two sons. The minister's name is Carrie Newhoff, the Canadian co-author of Parenting Beyond Your Capacity. The Newhoffs did this ritual for each of their sons, beginning with the eldest. A year before their son was to turn 13, they asked him to think of five adults in their relational circle whom he would like to have as mentors. The parents then made this request of each of the adults their child chose. At some point over the course of the next year, would you be willing to spend one day with our son? The particular activity can be anything. Take him to work with you, go on a trip, a hike, whatever. And during that day, would you share with him one spiritual truth and one life lesson? All the five adults instantly and enthusiastically said yes. At the end of the year, they all gathered together at a special dinner to talk about the spiritual lessons and life lessons and to offer a communal blessing for the boy on his transition from child to teenager. The mentors got as much out of the experience as the kids. As Carrie Newhoff points out, we all intuitively understand how important it is for our children to be held in a wider circle of relationships beyond their nuclear family. One mentor said, "I wish somebody had done this for me when I was 13. You might think about your own experiences growing up. Did you have mentors that made a difference for you? Teachers, coaches, people who taught you life lessons, people who took a particular interest in helping you find your way. Beyond individuals, was there a larger intergenerational community in which you felt held? When I think of the church of my childhood, a progressive Presbyterian church in Los Angeles, there wasn't any super mentor who changed my life, but there were adults who knew me, adults who made me feel welcome and valuable and supported. There was the senior minister, Reverend Charles Orr, who had baptized me as a baby and who greeted me warmly when I was a teenager working in the church office on Sunday mornings. There was the children's choir director, George Pegg, a kind, kind old man whom I chose to present me with my Bible when I was in grade 3. There was the confirmation class leader who took my questions seriously when I argued with him about theology. The associate minister, Reverend Linda Nepstead, who once let me borrow her car to go retrieve something I needed from home. There was a string of youth group leaders who blessed their hearts, took us on overnight retreats and social justice trips. And there were my parents' friends and my friends' parents with whom I became familiar over the years through carpools and potlucks. One of them recommended me for a summer job with a member of the women's circle, Dr. Mary Lou Terpenning, an oncologist, single mother, and generally very inspiring person. This wasn't a small town. This was transient Los Angeles. People in the church did come and go over time, but we went Sunday after Sunday. We stuck with it through the changes, and somehow all of these connections wove together so that I felt held in a larger intergenerational community of support. In that stable, fertile ground, I felt stronger, better able to grow into my best self. Maybe some of you have had similar experiences. I wonder what it's like for the kids in our congregation. Which of you might they remember when they are adults reflecting back on the church of their childhood? It's long been a tenet of Unitarian Universalist religious education that relationships we build with kids in our congregations are as important, if not more important, than any particular content we wish to convey to them. Reverend Shauna reminded me recently of the maxim touted by religious educator Angus MacLean back in the 1950s, the method is the message. You teach kids what it means to be you by how you behave, by how you treat them as you teach them. Reverend Emily Bogus was the UU colleague who told me about that coming-of-age ritual with the five mentors. She serves a congregation in New Jersey and recently led a seminar on family ministry that Reverend Shauna attended in person and Aaron attended online. Reverend Bogus says the increase in social isolation and the story about the five mentors got her thinking. Wouldn't it be great if everyone had a small group of people, a circle of five, to whom you could turn with regard to the big issues in your life? And furthermore, wouldn't it be great if this was a part of what our Unitarian Universalist congregations could do? Provide people with the connections that could build their circle of five. Reverend Bogus suggested that we hold in our mind a particular family in the congregation and then consider who else in the congregation would be well suited to fill these three roles. Who would root them in Unitarian Universalism? With whom could they discuss their faith and values, questions about meaning and purpose? Who would show up for them in a time of need? Who would help them branch out? Who might support them in finding ways in which they can follow their passions and use their gifts to serve the larger world? And here's another layer of questions. In which of these roles would you like to function for others? Would you want to be the mentor who discusses values and beliefs with a coming-of-age youth? Would you want to be the person who shows up for a family with a casserole, the person who visits an elder who is homebound? What conversations might you have if you ask people at coffee hour about their passions and gifts and how they long to make the world a better place? What would it be like if every child, youth, and adult in this congregation had a circle of five? Five people they could turn to with regard to the big issues in life. How would we do that? How could we become that community? And here's the risk part. The vision is huge. It's a cultural shift that would take a lot of thought, work, and experimenting over time, but it starts with the risk of reaching out. It won't work on a congregational level if we all only talk to people we already know. The basic building block of the cultural shift is taking the risk of reaching out, talking to people you don't know, sharing your authentic self, making a space for them to share their authentic self. Recall that factor noted earlier that facilitates friendships, a setting that encourages people to let their guard down and confide in one another. Some of you extroverts out there are perhaps saying, that's not a risk, that's a whole lot of fun. To you, I say thank you for the warmth and welcome that you provide for others. Others among us are less comfortable reaching out. It involves a risk of social awkwardness, the risk of saying or doing the wrong thing, trying for connection and having it not work out, being judged or rejected. Even as connections progress beyond the first getting to know you conversations into the building relationship phases, it's common to worry about how the other person is perceiving you. There's a great quotation that member Sue Ellen Gunther shared with us at a committee meeting recently. David Foster Wallace said, "You will become way less concerned with what other people think of you when you realize how seldom they do." Thank you, Sue Ellen. What a relief, right? What would happen if we each tried the spiritual practice of taking the risk of reaching out? What if we tried to get that one step closer to a congregational culture in which people might find at least some of their circle of five? Every one of us could take on the practice of being an unofficial greeter at coffee hour. Some of you already do this, I know. All of us could try it. Look for someone who's standing alone, someone you don't know, and introduce yourself. Ask if they've been coming here a long time or a short time. Ask what drew them to Unitarian Universalism in the first place and what they like about it now. Ask if the service made them think of any of their own life stories. Ask what they love to do. And listen, listen, listen. And then, if you want to reach out for deeper connections, you might try a small group. There's a section on our website that lists them. Click on Programs, then Adult Programs, then Small Groups. And you will find groups you can join, like the Spirituality Group, the Atheist, Humanist, and Agnostics Group, a Women's Group, and more. We also have special programs. You'll note in your order of service that next Sunday, I'll be leading a really cool theme exploration on risk. Please sign up. And on Tuesday, March 20th, I'm leading a first day of spring intergenerational walk at Swan Lake. This April, we have a particularly unique opportunity to practice the risk of reaching out. As part of our participation in GVAT, Greater Victoria Acting Together, we are running a listening campaign. GVAT team members want to have a conversation with you, each and every one of you, about issues you care about, community issues and challenges that concern you and affect your everyday living. The Listening Project has two goals. One, to discern which issues are top priority for our congregation so that they can be considered when GVAT as a collective chooses the common concerns on which we will take action as a coalition. The second goal of the listening campaign is simply to strengthen the connections among us here in this congregation by having good conversations about the things that matter most to us. You can choose whether to have a one-on-one conversation or participate in a group. To sign up, click the link in our e-weekly or newsletter, or on our website, go to Programs, then click on GVAT Listening Campaign. Or, if you prefer, today after the service, you can sign up the old-fashioned way on a clipboard being circulated by Susan Lang, please rise, Sonia Ignatieff, and Marion Pape. Susan, Sonia, there, and Marion. And Marion says there will also be a clipboard just sitting on that social responsibility shelf in the foyer there. Sign up. Those were primarily ways to practice reaching out with adults. Remember the five mentors in the 13-year-old's ritual? Remember all those adults I listed in my own memories of my childhood church? I love the idea that you could be that for our children and youth in this congregation. I know that for some people, reaching out to children and teenagers can feel especially daunting. Beware the eye roll. Lots of adults want to engage with kids, but just don't know what to say, You ask them how old they are. You comment on their clothing. Then what? How do you connect with them in a more meaningful way? I'm excited to say that on April 22nd, our Director of Kids Programming, Aaron, is going to lead Connecting with Kids, a workshop for all grown-ups in our intergenerational community. It will give us the tools we need to relate to kids with minimal awkwardness and maximum fun. It will give us a chance to consider in greater depth how we might create a circle of five kind of community for our kids, how we might each play a role in being the community that gives them roots in UUism, that shows up for them when they need support and helps them to branch out, to grow into the full potential of their unique gifts. Sunday, April 22nd, after the service. Hope you can make it. It can be a lonely world out there. We can be a safe harbor, a place that offers to children, to youth, to adults of all ages, meaningful connections, a network of support for grappling with the challenges of living. We can be a closely woven, life-giving, energizing force for one another and for the larger world that we serve together. If we are willing to take the risk of reaching out, so may it be.